the growing use of healthcare approaches that are outside mainstream Western medicine. Many people still refer to it as alternative medicine, but the new term, the more accurate term, is complementary medicine. That's because most people who take supplements or have acupuncture or seek other types of non-traditional therapies do so along with conventional treatments. And many of these treatments are gaining widespread acceptance among traditional doctors and health insurance plans. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about complementary medicine, what it entails, what types of complementary medicine are more common and are thought to be more effective, and what you should know about choosing therapies wisely. From massage to spinal manipulation, omega-3 supplements to acupuncture, Maine Calling learns about non-traditional medicine that's growing in popularity. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're going to learn more about complementary medicine and how you may want to incorporate it into your healthcare routine. With me in the studio to explain just what complementary medicine is and ways it may help you feel better are three guests. Dr. Liz Strawbridge, she's a family medicine physician specializing in integrative medicine. Chris Haskell is a licensed acupuncturist with Rocky Coast Acupuncture. And Dr. Rolf Thieme is a doctor of osteopathy, I just learned. I've been pronouncing it wrong all these years, as well as a licensed acupuncturist. Of course, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about alternative or complementary medicine? Would you like to incorporate non-traditional medical approaches to your and your family's health care? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you all. And as we get going, I just wanted to ask all three of you how you got involved in this. And I'll start with you, Dr. Strawbridge. Where did you come up with the interest in alternative medicine?
It actually started when I was back in medical school in Rhode Island. During medical school, obviously, you learn all the pathophysiology and the science and the pharmacology. But I felt like there was something missing, something about the human story that we were missing in medical school. And that was when I started to look elsewhere to incorporate other ways of healing in the education that I was going through. And I found through the University of Arizona that they had a program for medical students called integrative medicine. And I went out and did a rotation there. And that was the first time that I was exposed to it. And I just felt like this aha, this calling, like finally everything had kind of come together. It was a place where I learned about all different forms of healing and therapy that wasn't strictly based on pharmacology. And it really completed, I think, my education.
Did you feel as though you were swimming against the stream when you chose to take this route?
Definitely at that time. I mean, during medical school, there was an interest group in alternative medicine. And alternative is, and complementary is kind of a funny term because it makes it feel like there's an either or. Where when I went to the integrative medicine educational program out there, I realized it didn't have to be an either or. And there was this fantastic group of people that was interested in the same things that I was. And they were still, you know, pursuing their MDs and becoming the best Western medical doctors that they could, while at the same time being able to open their minds to all the other healing modalities that were out there. So it was a little bit, when I came back to medical school and was back amongst my peers there, I felt a little bit isolated, but I had made such a network across the country of people who had gone to Arizona for this particular program.
Dr. Thieme, can you tell us your story?
Mine was quite a few years ago. So in the 70s, acupuncture wasn't very well known in the United States. And at that time, I was finishing my degree in pharmacy. And I happened to be exposed to a physician from the UK who at a veterans hospital did some acupuncture, and I became interested in it. And that kind of pulled me into the direction of becoming an acupuncturist. And after finishing that, I happened to continue to be led by destiny, so to speak. I received an injury, and at that time I was treated by an osteopath. who did manipulation on me. And up until that time, I wasn't exposed to osteopathy. And so then I later on, after being a licensed acupuncturist, I went off to osteopathic medical school at the University of New England here in Biddeford, Maine, and finished that. And then subsequently was asked to participate with the integrative medicine program at Maine Medical Center and have been involved in teaching there manipulation and acupuncture. So I got steered into it more than I chose it.
Many of the things you said just now are really interesting to me, but one is that in the 1970s, you were exposed to acupuncture at a VA hospital. So it shows that the VA was thinking outside of traditional medicine even then. No, you're shaking your head.
I am shaking my head. I was exposed to it, but it was done off the record. And it was done only because there was this visiting physician who was there from the UK. And I can recall that they had a fairly lengthy discussion about whether he could do it because he was not credentialed to do acupuncture in the hospital because there was no credentialing for acupuncture at the time.
Chris Haskell, tell me about your journey if you don't mind.
When I started college, I wanted to be involved in medicine, and I studied biology and thought about a career perhaps as a doctor, but I decided that being a doctor or a nurse didn't seem like something that I could do, given that sometimes it takes a very strong stomach. And so I naively let go of my interest in medicine and just decided that if I couldn't be a doctor or a nurse, I would just go a completely different direction. I became a high school English teacher. And then my colleague and very good friend, Jason Stein, who I work with at Rocky Coast, said he wanted to go to acupuncture school, and did I want to go on a road trip looking at the schools. And by the end of the road trip, I knew that acupuncture would be a wonderful profession for me to involve myself in, because it integrated both my interest in working with people with mental health issues and also my interest in working with the body, so that on an average day, I can be talking with someone about their issues with depression, with anxiety, or I can be treating someone's knee pain. And it just makes the work much richer and more interesting.
Now, had you been an acupuncture patient yourself? Had you been somebody who had acupuncture at that point?
Never.
Interesting.
No, I had never been exposed to it. I knew it existed. I had only ever participated in Western medicine or getting the random massage. But when I became very interested in it on this road trip, looking at schools all up and down the West Coast, because I ended up going to school in Seattle where I was living at the time, I decided, well, I should go get a treatment to be able to find out if I feel like this is valid. And I went with an old shoulder issue, and the way that it cleared up was fairly amazing to me. And I thought, okay, now I'm fully 100% in.
Interesting. So I need to ask you all the broader questions. What counts as complementary or alternative medicine? I suspect there's a little bit of a debate about that. Maybe I'll start by asking you, Liz, how you incorporate it into your practice. I'm remembering one time when one of my kids had a tummy ache when he was a baby, their pediatrician teaching me how to make fennel tea. Would that be considered doing complementary medicine within a traditional practice?
Certainly. I think, you know, as physicians, you're very trained and steeped in evidence-based medicine, and that's what gives us the bias towards prescribing medications, because those are the tools that we're taught with. So they're the tools that we know, they're the tools we trust, and those that we use. The problem with some of the other modalities, such as nutrition or supplements or herbs like that fennel tea, or acupuncture or osteopathy or mind-body medicine, I mean, it goes on, is that there's no money to be made in funding a huge study to see, you know, the efficacy. So what we usually use and what I've been taught through my program is sort of what we call a sliding scale of evidence. So when something has a potential to be very beneficial, and also, you know, is very low risk and the cost is low, then I would present that to the patient and say, look, there's no study that shows that fennel tea is going to clear up your bellyache, but it might work, and it's low risk, and it's a nice ritual, and it's a nice way for you to participate in the healing of your family and your child, and it's something you can pass on. And so there's a lot of other benefits that I think really outweigh the fact that maybe she won't like the fennel tea or that it costs, you know, a few dollars.
So. It's interesting what you said. One of the reasons there hasn't been as much research is there's no incentive to fund the research.
Right.
But I'm guessing one of the on the flip side of that, you're not able to know, for example, if you're going to make the fennel tea, well, what's the perfect ratio of
right.
the fennel seed to the water and how long should I
Certainly.
Boil it? So you don't have and pharmaceuticals have gone through this process of dosage
right.
and things like that.
I think in some things like the fennel tea, that would have been something where in particular cultures that was passed down from generation to generation. And we've kind of lost that a little bit. We've come so far away from these, you know, sort of traditional concoctions and medicines that we've lost the art of it a little bit. That's the hard part is that we don't have the exact science for a lot of it or the exact dosages or the best preparations or delivery systems. But that's when you have to believe that the all of the other benefits are still worth it.
Dr. Teamy, I want to learn more about what you're doing with other doctors and healthcare practitioners at Maine Medical Center. There's a center for integrative medicine there that you mentioned earlier in the program. How does Maine Medical Center, the largest hospital in Maine, work integrative medicine into its more traditional approaches? Is it throughout the system, only in certain kinds of, certain kinds of diagnoses? How does it work?
Well, it seems to be mostly focused in family medicine as well as pediatric areas. And it's involved with the family medicine residency training as well as the pediatric residency training. Dr. Strawbridge is actually providing it at Maine Medical Center in the hospital. But as far as teaching the future physicians that are coming through the residency programs, they're being exposed to the education there at various sites that Maine Med has. It seems to be focused there, but there are other areas that the physicians will refer patients to those groups and will provide care there. Best place to contact them, Dr. Strawbridge might be the best person who's able to mm-hmm. give the information about the contact. But if you contact Maine Medical Center and Family Medicine Program, mm-hmm. I think you'd be directed to the Integrative Medicine Program.
Have you seen throughout your career acceptance of integrative or complementary medicine grow among the traditional medical community?
I think because that I came into this pretty early. In the beginning, there was an awful lot of resistance. But I think that patients have really driven increased acceptance. And I think in the process, like when you were talking with Dr. Strawbridge about the fennel tea, one of the things that I feel it's taught me is it's really helped me to want to empower my patients and to trust them, because I can maybe direct them that if they were going to make fennel tea, to start out making it and feel within themselves, what is the response you're getting? Do you think it should be a little bit stronger? Should it be a little bit weaker? And when I have faith in my patients and their ability to actually start taking greater responsibility in their own health care, then I think that has changed how I practice, and I'm learning that they want to be empowered to make the choices and that we should offer them the choices.
Interesting. Chris Haskell, are there things for which acupuncture is more effective than others?
Absolutely. I often answer this question when people are calling and they say, can acupuncture help me with this specific back pain issue or this specific digestive issue? We have areas that we excel. When someone comes in and they tell me they have that specific issue, I know it's going to be very easy to treat. And just like Western medicine, there are plenty of issues that we don't do very well with. And I'll be upfront with people on that also, that you can try this. However, it may not work. But I would say the places that we excel the most in, certainly most people think of acupuncture with body pain. and the degree to which an issue is due to tight muscle, we do really well with, and things can clear up very quickly. A lot of people are starting to learn also that acupuncture is great for fertility concerns. And my office specifically, that's something we specialize in. And it can be wonderful for people who are being told that perhaps they have unexplained infertility and they have now another option to access something that could look at their picture in a different way and offer them a different alternative medicine.
And I learned recently that sometimes acupuncture is used for anesthesia.
Yes, I would not say in the United States.
Oh, interesting.
I chuckle because occasionally we will call an insurance company to see if our client has coverage, and they will say yes in the case of anesthesia. But that is not something that is practiced in the United States, so it always makes us laugh a little because of that. Essentially, it means they don't have coverage. But, you know, to answer that question, my father actually told me a story once about when Nixon went to China. His photographer, I think it was his photographer, got a case of appendicitis, and they did the operation with only acupuncture as anesthesia. And the American people that were around that situation could not believe how well the patient did and how well he recovered. And after that situation, when he came back to the United States, that's part of when Americans became exposed to acupuncture, because it was so powerfully seen using as anesthesia.
And you mentioned at the beginning mental health issues are one of the focuses of foci, I should say, of your practice. Are there certain mental health issues that for which acupuncture is more effective than others?
Yes. I think we do really well with depression and anxiety, which tend to be more common. I have worked with some folks who are dealing with maybe OCD, and I don't feel like if it's spurred on mainly by anxiety, it can help. If it's kind of its own thing, I don't think acupuncture is as effective as it is for anxiety and depression and those types of issues.
Great. Well, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston. Presenting the inaugural Great Falls Brewfest June 21 in Lewiston, greatfallsbrewfest.com. Maine Health, working with member organizations like Maine Behavioral Healthcare to help make our communities the healthiest in America, mainehealth.org. And Casella, committed to increasing recycling rates while reducing residential trash and landfill loads through zero sort recycling. Casella, giving resources new life.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Amazon and book publisher Hachette are locked in a battle over prices for ebooks. What this standoff means for book buyers, the future of publishing, and the role of Amazon.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Time Warner Cable is adjusting their channel lineup this month, and it affects many MPBN television viewers. Time Warner has already made some of the adjustments in southern Maine and eastern New Hampshire. These new adjustments will cover most of the remainder of the state. The new channel assignments include the MPBN Maine channel on channel 3, 10, or 13, but the high-def channel will be at 1221. World moves to 1276, Create will be on 1278, and all of these located in the new Time Warner Cable grouping called Local. For more information on the new Time Warner Cable channel assignments for MPBN Television, visit mpbn.net and click on Television. And if you continue to have trouble finding your favorite MPBN channels, call MPBN Audience Services at 800-884-1717. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, understanding just what complementary medicine is and determining whether you might want to include non-traditional approaches to your health care. With me in the studio, Chris Haskell, a licensed acupuncturist. Dr. Rolf Thieme, a doctor of osteopathy, and Dr. Liz Strawbridge, a family medicine physician. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email if you'd rather, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Susan Grant. She's Director of Therapy and Adaptive Programs with the Carlisle Academy in Lyman, Maine. Sue, thanks for joining us. Tell us about Carlisle Academy and what you do there.
Well, Carlisle Academy is a full-service program. We use our niche, so to speak, is we have equine-based programs, activities, and therapies both, and we service people from the age of 2 on through adulthood with a multitude of programs that are designed to help children with development or people recovering from an illness or an accident. So it's a combination of hypnotherapy, therapeutic or adaptive riding, carriage driving, vaulting, and then we also do have a division that provides traditional equine-based activities for people perhaps after they've graduated from the adaptive part of our program.
You use the phrase hippotherapy. Is that working with horses, or is that something else?
Hippotherapy is actually a treatment strategy. It's used by physical therapists, occupational therapists, and speech therapists. And it's a very specialized treatment strategy. It's put in as a part of a clinical treatment plan. And we are actually using the back of a horse as a treatment surface. So if you've been into a clinic and seen either PTs or OTs or speech therapists using mats or balls or different kinds of swings, it's the same idea. It's just that our treatment surface is much more dynamic. And we can grade a lot of the movement input more readily because of the dynamic nature of the horse.
I've been up to another organization in Maine, Riding to the Top, and seen some of the work that they've done with developmentally disabled children. I'm very curious, though, you talked about people who are recovering from injury. What kinds of injuries seem to be best suited to this kind of therapy?
People post-stroke, people with MS, people that have had traumatic brain injuries, people with muscular dystrophy, people with any range of neuromotor or degenerative problems can benefit. So anybody who might need either of any of the therapies, PT, OT, or speech, it's the exact same thing. It's just that we're using the horse as a treatment surface.
And so what is it about a horse? What's the magic?
The magic about the horse is it all, as we like to say, our tagline is it's not rocket science, it's neuroscience. Or the other thing that we say is hippotherapy, we treat brain stems. And in fact, the movement of the horse really is directed, it's very, very different from sitting on a therapy ball. There are 110 different dimensions of movement that a patient can be placed on a horse. And so it does a lot, to help with brain organization and the reception of information that helps to develop neural pathways. We can change how the person is sitting on the horse. We can change the gait of the horse. We can change how the horse, the figures of movement in the arena, and all of those changes and gradable opportunities provide us with many more opportunities for giving movement and sensory-based information into that patient.
And finally, does insurance cover any of the costs for your patients?
We are actually able to bill some or all of our treatment to a number of private health insurance providers. We are doing some systems advocacy in that area. It's early on, but we do have some opportunities for billing some health insurances, and we also have a philanthropic arm or branch to our organization called the Carlisle Charitable Foundation, and that foundation exists to provide scholarship support for people who would like to receive hippotherapy or participate in adaptive or therapeutic riding or carriage driving.
Well, Sue, thanks so much for calling in, and we will definitely put information about Carlisle Academy on our Facebook page. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
We have an email from Mark. Humans have an incredible ability to heal themselves, which is evident in the placebo effect. How does alternative medicine know that they are not just channeling the placebo effect?
I'll take that one. I think there's nothing wrong with the placebo effect. Honestly, I think that capitalizing upon the placebo effect is something that is a positive thing. And obviously, it's not that you want to manipulate patients into thinking they're getting something that they're not. But I think by educating them, just as this patient said, about the body's innate ability to heal, it's just really a demonstration of the magnificent mind-body connection that is slowly kind of coming back to surface in our culture, I think. But I think that's sort of the best way to illustrate it is, you know, when you get butterflies before coming on a radio show, that is mind-body. When you take something that a doctor tells you is going to make you feel better and it makes you feel better even if it's a sugar pill, that's mind-body. And so I think it's really about capitalizing upon that and letting patients understand and empower them so they realize their capacity to heal themselves.
Going to Michael in Brunswick. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling. Michael, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am a veterinarian and a veterinary acupuncturist, and I just wanted to chime in that that complementary and integrative medicine is something that has great benefits and opportunities for our animal companions.
All right. Thanks for calling. Going to Ward and Gardner. Hi, Ward.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question is, I have what I consider severe back pain. In fact, I have it right now, but it hadn't happened for 3 years, so I thought I had it pretty much under control. And I did try acupuncture right after the last one about 3 years ago, but since the pain had already gone, I couldn't really judge any benefit that I got from the acupuncture. So I was wondering what your advice, your people would advise me to do, since I normally don't have the pain and I don't have a relationship with an acupuncturist right now. How do I set it up so I can get to that person when I have the pain? And usually they wait for 3 or 4 weeks by the time the pain's all gone.
Chris?
Yes, I think that it would be worth exploring using acupuncture when the pain is active. So if it's active now, trying to get an appointment fairly soon would be worth it to you, because it doesn't sound like your alternative would be that you have an alternative, maybe I didn't hear it correctly, to getting rid of the pain. You know, if it was gone the first time, that was one test you did, but going while the pain is active and letting yourself try it for 3 or 4 treatments, say twice a week for 2 weeks, I think you'd get a really good picture of how quickly it would change. It depends on, of course, where the pain's coming from, but if it is just muscle related, I bet you would have a very good change.
Good luck, Ward. Going to Jennifer in Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. One comment that actually would fit into what the last gentleman just said. I had plantar fasciitis, and instead of going for a cortisone shot, I went to acupuncture. And between massage and acupuncture and chiropractic, I did get it handled. And after that, I continue now to go to my acupuncturist once a month, just for, there's always something, you know, your shoulder or your back, or you have a little cold. So I proactively go to acupuncture once a month. But my comment was that one of the problems in proving the effectiveness of alternative medicine is that I think it isn't like taking an antibiotic for an infection. It's you have to do many different things together, and that whole picture is what will bring you the health. Sometimes, you know, in improving the effectiveness, it's difficult, because if you just look at the isolated acupuncture versus acupuncture, chiropractic, yoga, Tai Chi, whatever, lots of different modalities together can be much more effective. So that was just my comment, that it's difficult to just pick one thing for, and I think a lot is we need to have more responsibility about our own health, and by being more proactive and doing some of these things as preventative versus just curative.
Go ahead.
I wanted to respond to a couple of the things that we just heard. One was a question about placebo. And I know as I got my undergraduate degree in pharmacy, and I know that the pharmaceutical industry will pick a particular color for their capsule because that color is what they've studied and associated with whatever they're going to be treating. So everybody is using the idea of placebo, and the word placebo means I please. And as a physician, as a doctor, I want to please my patient because then I'm positively using the mind-body element. So I think that that's a really important idea. And the other idea that I wanted to talk about with regards to back pain or plantar fasciitis or any of the pain things is as a doctor, the word doctor means I teach, not I prescribe, not I diagnose, not I stick in needles in people. So really what I want to do in my practice with my patients is I want to educate them what's the nature of their problem so they can better manage taking care of themselves. And they may integrate a whole bunch of things like acupuncture or fennel tea or any of the other elements to try to make it work better.
Jennifer, thanks for your call. We've been talking a lot about acupuncture, and we have two acupuncturists in the room, but I want to also talk about supplements because that's the most, from studies, that's what more Americans do than anything else that's considered complementary medicine. Are you all concerned at all about people taking supplements without doctor's supervision, especially, you know, getting on the internet and saying and figuring out what might work for something?
Certainly. You know, supplements can be very, very beneficial in certain cases. But I think the reason they're the most popular alternative is because they feel most like pills. You know, they feel most like our comfort zone with Western medicine. And it's kind of an easy jump to go from, you know, instead of taking this pill for my hypertension, I'm going to take this supplement for my hypertension. So it kind of fits in with our thought process. And the studies also can be a little bit, you know, easier to do because there is dosages and you know, such as that. So I think there is value in supplements, and I think people can sometimes maybe spend too much. I have some patients who come in and they take 20 pills and they're all supplements, and I don't think all of them are needed. I think what we need to do is, again, re-educate the patient about being in touch with their body and restoring that mind-body connection and listening to their body. And maybe there are a few supplements that will help, you know, benefit a particular issue. But I think we can't just jump from pharmaceuticals to supplements and think that, you know, all of a sudden we're now being natural. I mean, they can be very powerful and they can be dangerous if taken in, you know, too many quantities, just as regular pills can.
Most commonly taken, omega-3s, fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
You all have thoughts on this? All of you are nodding. Go first. Go ahead.
Two quick thoughts. One, when I have people come in to see me, whether they're seeing me for a digestive issue, they're 5 years old, they're 90 years old, insomnia, pain, whatever it is, I will suggest to them that they put themselves on an omega-3 because the benefits are so high. Most Americans don't get enough omega-3s in their diet, and omega-3s can reduce inflammation. They can help with insomnia and anxiety. They can help with digestion, constipation, all kinds of issues. So having it as a part of if they eat a lot of fish and they feel they don't need it, that's one thing. But most people don't. Most Americans don't. And so I will talk to them about it. However, and then this would be the second thing, high quality is very important. It wasn't too many years ago that a few major stores got in trouble for selling an omega-3 that had some kind of toxic something in it. I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago, and it was the store brand. And so I'll often tell people, not that the store brand is always bad, but do a little research before you choose your omega-3, because just like everything else, you know, bread, 17 choices of bread in front of you, and some of them are very high quality and some of them are very low quality. And that's the exact same thing with choosing a supplement and specifically omega-3s.
And to get to that quality point, because that's a really good point, there's a wonderful website called consumerlab.com. Unfortunately, I think you have to subscribe to it, but it's a wonderful resource, and I think most physicians should subscribe to it, because it gives you all the different brands that have been studied and tested, and it tells you, you know, the if they found any toxins or the credibility of the actual dose that is being marketed. And also the cost per the dose. So it really is a wonderful website to be able to steer patients in the right directions of reliable brands.
Do you recommend that most people take an omega-3?
I do. Again, there's such little downside. And as Chris mentioned, just sort of across the board, there's a lot of data. That's one of the most widely studied supplements as well. And exactly in depression and mental health, anxiety, as well as obviously we know about it more for its cardiac repercussions and triglyceride lowering, inflammation of the gut. I mean, I think it's true that we don't get enough omega-3s from fish. So I think it's a really good idea.
All right. Well, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do FL Putnam, dedicated to managing environmentally and socially responsible investment portfolios since 1983. FLPutnam.com. And Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Senator Olympia Snow. In 2012, disheartened by the partisanship that has stalemated Congress, Snow announced that she would not seek re-election. Join me next time for a conversation with Senator Olympia Snow on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
And you can join us tomorrow afternoon at 1 for that City Arts and Lectures program. Join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for a rebroadcast of last night's 2nd District Democratic primary debate. You can also see it on MPBN television tomorrow at 8:30, or we'll do a wrap-up of both of the primary debates Sunday afternoon beginning at 3 here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, complementary medicine. In the studio with me, Dr. Ralph Teamy. He is a doctor of osteopathy. I'm going to learn that before the end of this program, and a licensed acupuncturist. Dr. Liz Strawbridge is a family medicine physician specializing in integrative medicine, and Chris Haskell, licensed acupuncturist with Rocky Coast Acupuncture. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Going to Ava in York. Hi, Ava. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I find this fascinating. I have a daughter who's now in her 20s. She has left Maine to pursue her master's degree at a specialized school for somatic psychology, the mind-body connection. And she suffers from Crohn's disease specifically, which then got her into this line of thinking how she can help others in the future. But she's had this diagnosis for 12 years. And she still is treated by the medical world with infusion treatments. And I'm hoping to hear something about your type of suggestion for alternative medicine.
Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Sure. I actually treat a lot of people with inflammatory bowel disease, and as your daughter has clearly figured out, there is a huge mind-body connection, and that's obviously not the only thing. There's a lot of pathology going on, but it is empowering for patients to be able to realize they can help control or relieve their symptoms by exerting some mind-body techniques. As far as Crohn's go, I mean, I usually recommend probiotics. I recommend trying an elimination diet to see if there's any particular foods that aggravate the symptoms. I do a lot of, as I mentioned, mind-body work. And then I try and really push anti-inflammatories. So whether that's taking an omega-3 supplement, possibly turmeric, possibly boswellia, to try to decrease the gut inflammation. That's usually the goal for both symptom relief and longer-term relief. But there's a lot that can be done with mind-body medicine. And I had a pediatric integrative doc who used to be here said that he had a patient, you know, who was on Remicade and everything like that, and then was very stressed out. She graduated high school, completely not stressed, relaxed, off all of her Western meds, doing wonderfully, got a stressful job, everything came back, she was back on the Remicade. So, you know, you can follow these trajectories, and the best I really try to do is educate patients about this. So sounds like your daughter's already figured it out.
Ava, thanks for your call and good luck to your daughter. We have a Facebook post. She says, as a licensed massage therapist with more than 12 years of experience, I'm still surprised to hear from my clients that their physicians and healthcare providers are not recommending alternative medicine such as chiropractic, acupuncture, and massage therapy as another option for pain management over prescription drugs, which can become an addiction issue. My guess is as to why it isn't a recommendation is that appointment times are too brief, with too much ground to cover, alternative medicine isn't covered in their training, and or they might not have personal experience with how effective they can be. Can you ask the panel to elaborate? Thoughts?
From a medical perspective, I think she's right on about a few of those. I think it's hard for physicians to recommend something when they're not familiar with it. And so if they've never had or had patients with experience with acupuncture, then I think realistically and correctly, they're not going to recommend it. So until the education changes in medical school, which I think it is, that might, you know, we're going to see a little bit of lag time. In residency, I know at Maine Med, we're getting a tremendous amount of integrative medicine. So I think things are changing at that level already.
All right. Go ahead.
I also wanted to mention that we recently realized this also and decided to go do talks at different medical practices, most recently the pediatric, InterMed's pediatric department. And, you know, just in a 30-minute brief discussion with doctors and talking about what we treat, there were a lot of aha moments, and now those doctors are referring their patients to us. So it was very brief, and now, you know, clients are coming.
Dr. Tamey?
I was going to mention the idea of integrative medicine. You know, I really think that in that situation, we have a lot of choices right now. And I've seen a lot of change in the last decade. If you go back 10 years, people weren't thinking the same way we are now. So it is a little bit slow for this all to be implemented, but it is changing. It is moving in the right direction. And more people are combining treatments to try to maximize the benefit for their patients.
Headed to Portland, and Jay. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hey, how is everybody? I'm calling just a quick comment. I'm long-term in recovery and thankfully been very successful, and I use acupuncture regularly in combination with the Wellbutrin, and, you know, have very, very good results with that. Seeing a lot and witnessing a lot of addiction, heroin in particular, and just curious as to if there's an integrative approach that can help addicts in early stage withdrawal, combined Suboxone, of course, is in favor a lot these days. But acupuncture has been very useful for me, but I'm obviously in a different place than a lot of people. But I'm wondering if
okay.
These modalities can be combined. And that's all. Thanks.
Okay, great. Chris?
When I went to school in Seattle, we had a few different community clinics that we were a part of, and we would go to facilities where folks were just very briefly on drugs, dealing with their addiction actively, and they would see us. They would have acupuncture every single day, and it helped tremendously. And there's that was happening in New York City with cocaine addicts as early as the late 70s, I think early 80s, and they found tremendous results. We also did incarcerated youth who were coming off of drugs, and it was part of their it was mandated by the judge that they also receive acupuncture, and it was very helpful.
Mm. Jay, thanks for the call. We have a long Facebook post from Sasha, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she is a naturopathic doctor, and I was wondering if you could take just a couple moments to explain, I was going to say, the difference between a naturopathic doctor and what you both do, or is there a difference?
Certainly. So I hope, Sasha, that I say this correctly, but a naturopathic doctor will, they get a lot more education and training in diet, in nutrition and herbs and supplements. And so they are much more adept than regular physicians at treating patients from a more natural approach initially. So their focus in their schooling is on sort of the pharmacology of herbs, I guess, is a better way to put it. So we don't get any of that training in medical school.
Okay. And Sasha has put a pretty lengthy, you know, but informational post on our Facebook page. So if you're more interested, go to MPBN's Main Calling Facebook page. We'll head to Gary in Ocean Park. I think you might be our last question, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'd like to ask your panel, how many drugs or supplements is too many? I was on as many as 11 different meds and 5 supplements, and all of a sudden I noticed my stomach was completely screwed up. So now I'm having problems with digesting food, and I think it might have been attributed to some of the meds I was taking. Could your panel address this, please?
Okay. Is there a number? Is there a number that's too many?
It's a little bit hard. I appreciate the question. It's hard to know exactly, you know, which medicines, when we don't know the medicines, what's causing what. But as I mentioned before, you know, my goal is usually to get people off the amount of medicines and supplements that they're on to be able to manage their health, you know, on their own. So I can't really answer that question, but I would say certainly visit your physician and say, hey, I feel like I'm taking too much stuff. Is there anything that's non-essential, or is there any way for me to lower my blood pressure without taking this pill? And hopefully they'll have an answer for you.
Thanks so much for calling, Gary. Liz, Chris, Ralph, thank you all for joining us today. Dr. Liz Strawbridge is a family medicine physician specializing in integrative medicine. Chris Haskell is a licensed acupuncturist with Rocky Coast Acupuncture. And Dr. Rolf Thieme is a doctor of osteopathy and a licensed acupuncturist. Today's program was produced by our volunteers, Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Our intern, Charlotte Ruddy, answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Main Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/maincalling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget that we are reading Christina Baker Klein's Orphan Train for the next Main Calling Book Club to be held on June 26. Head over to your local bookstore or library and pick up a copy and take part in our June Book Club. That's Christina Baker Klein's Orphan Train. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Main Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.